This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
An exodus seems to be underway in the House of Representatives. We're not even halfway into the congressional term, and 15 Republicans have already announced their retirements ahead of the 2020 elections. One member making for the exits is Will Hurd, a former CIA officer who once managed undercover operations in Afghanistan. Hurd was elected from a district in Texas in 2014, and he's seen as a moderate. His announcement is significant because Hurd is, for the 16 months he has left to serve, the only African-American in the House Republican caucus. Our Washington correspondent, Susan Glasser, caught up with Will Hurd last week at his office on Capitol Hill.
So, Congressman, national security is one of your abiding interests, and obviously it's the through line between your unique service as a undercover CIA agent and a member of Congress. We're in the middle of yet another upheaval on President Trump's national security team. He's now dumped his third national security advisor, who knows, you know, who will replace John Bolton or what that means in terms of the administration's foreign policy. The backdrop to this latest round of chaos is Ambassador Bolton apparently objecting to the president's plan to bring the Taliban to Camp David.
It's wild.
These were the guys shooting at you.
No, absolutely. And these are the guys that are still shooting at our men and women in the military, but also our allies. And that's what makes this outrageous. So I think everybody agrees that being able to decrease our posture in Afghanistan specifically would be a positive thing. However, we can't ever let that place become a location where terrorists can train, equip, and continue to attacks on the homeland. Now, when we negotiate with a group of people, you can't give everything away and get nothing in return. So they were negotiating in bad faith, the Taliban I'm speaking of, by continuing to do attacks while you're trying to negotiate an agreement. I do believe when you're talking, you're not fighting, generally. In this case, that may not necessarily be the case. And knowing Ambassador Bolton, I'm sure he was, like me, outraged by this idea. I think if I read the tea leaves, I don't think the right verb we should be using is anything relating to firing. Mm-hmm. I think John Bolton decided that this was not something that he can continue to do.
You know, often in conversations in Washington, there's a difficulty of, you know, sort of bridging the gap between the national security conversation, the foreign policy world, and then the sort of political world, domestic politics. You physically straddle that line, I think, by representing a district on the border with Mexico. And one of the things that you've most consistently spoken out about over the last couple of years is this vexing question of President Trump's border wall, both the existence and need for it, which you've been opposed to, and then also the question of how he's gone about funding it, the question of why immigration reform, while broadly supported until very recently by people in both parties, has been impossible to achieve. So what is Washington screwing up about this? What did they get wrong about your district?
Well, I wish I could pass a piece of legislation that says you can't talk about the border unless you've been down to the border a few times. Because what
if
what
that
people,
was required for expertise in Washington, we'd be in trouble.
Right. Look, every mile of the border is different from every other mile. I represent 820 miles of the border. It's about 2/3 of the border between Texas and Mexico. And
you go almost from the San Antonio suburbs to
El Paso, right? So along the border, it's the town is called Eagle Pass, all the way to El Paso. And there are parts of the border where Border Patrol's response time to a threat is measured in hours to days. So if you have a threat and it's going to take the good guys, it's going to take them hours to get there, a wall is actually not a physical barrier. It's a colossal waste of money. And so building a wall from sea to shining sea is the most expensive and least effective way to do border security. We should be using more technology. And unfortunately, most people believe that we have the greatest, the latest and greatest technology along the border. Unfortunately, it's like 20 years old. And a lot of these tools that we have down there, you have to have a PhD in computer science in order for it to operate. So the people, the men and women that are putting themselves in harm's way in order to protect our border, don't have the resources they need. We also need more men and women in Border Patrol, and we don't have enough. And so we can secure our border. Another way what we should be operating on, and when you look at the humanitarian crisis that we're dealing with right now and the number of illegal folks that are coming into our country, it's going to be the highest it's been in a really long time.
President
if not
Trump
ever.
Calls that an invasion. Is it an invasion?
Look, is it illegal? I would say it's illegal immigration, right? That's the accurate word. And the root, we have to address the root causes of the problem. The root causes of the problem is violence, lack of economic opportunity, and extreme poverty in the Northern Triangle. That's El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. And what we should be doing is leading with American soft power in those areas, that's economic and development aid, to help restructure many of those countries. Because it's a fraction of the cost to solve the problem there before having to deal with it when it actually gets to when it gets to our borders. We should be getting the entire Western Hemisphere involved in solving this problem.
Is opposition to the wall, is that one of the reasons driving this incredible exodus of Texas Republicans like yourself out of the House of Representatives? You're one now, I believe it's 5 Republican members, many of whom are pretty senior, who've made a decision not to run again for re-election. What's going on there?
No, I don't. It doesn't have anything to do with my decision or my positions. For me, it's real simple. The President of the United States is not my boss. The Speaker of the House is not my boss, right? My bosses are the 800,000 people that I represent. And I agree when I agree, I disagree when I disagree. I did it under the last president, I've done it under this president. And so for me, I believe it's an opportunity for me to serve my country in a different way. I haven't talked to the other members of the Texas delegation about their decision, but these are positions, we shouldn't want someone staying in these positions for decades, right? I've always said to do the job well, you have a shelf life of 6, 7, 8 years because of the travel and the activity. And so this was a logical time for me. And I also want to help candidates across the country that would have been great partners for me when I was up here. And the way to do that is to go in and help those candidates in their districts and do that across the country. So I'm looking forward to doing that in this upcoming election cycle, because here's the reality as a Republican, and I tell this to my colleagues in Texas, and this is applicable for the rest of the country. If the Republican Party in Texas doesn't start looking like Texas, there won't be a Republican Party in Texas. And in 2020, Texas is a purple state, meaning in essence, a basketball reference, it's a jump ball. Democrats can win. Just because there's not a statewide election Democrat in
Texas. Which,
by the way,
is an amazing statement in and of itself. I remember when we first started Politico magazine a few years ago, actually right when you came to Congress in 2014, and we ran an article that said, Texas is going to become a purple state. And people were like, that's crazy. that's crazy. It was not viewed as a successful piece of political analysis.
No, but it's true. And so when you look at who are the two largest growing groups of voters, minorities and young people, people under the age of 29 will be a third of the electorate in 2020. These are places where the Republican brand doesn't resonate as well as it could and should. And there's an opportunity, right? There's an opportunity because independents and Democrats are concerned with the direction that their party is going. And so there's an opportunity here. And I truly believe that a competition of ideas is important for us to be able to meet these generational defining challenges that are at our doorstep.
Well, it's interesting. You talk about opportunity. We're sitting behind in your office here. You've got a framed copy of a Texas Monthly cover that has you on the cover recently as Party of One. And I mentioned you're the only African-American Republican in the House of Representatives. There'll be zero when you're gone. There's one in the Senate. And you also have this incredibly turbocharged rhetoric that we've been seeing, no less from the Twitter feed of the President of the United States, being very critical of some of your fellow members of Congress who are women of color. Is it possible to recruit Republicans of color given this political moment?
It is, and there's some good Republican candidates of color that are running across the country. There's a guy in Houston, Texas, named Wesley Hunt, who's phenomenal. Right, served time in the military. Does it make it more difficult to go to communities that hasn't seen a Republican? Yes, but that's what I've been doing for the last, you know, from my five and a half years in Congress. And so I'm going to continue to do that because our message should resonate. But here's the problem. If people don't trust you or people don't think you care about them, they're not going to listen to what you say.
Well, so in the course of the years that you've been campaigning across this incredibly far-flung, very competitive district, which is an outlier just not only in its size, but because it is competitive between the parties, how has it changed? I mean, has the Republican Party's brand, you think, become more challenging in a district like that because of demographic change, or is it also been accelerated by the politics of the Trump era?
Look, I think when you have statements that talk about the equivalent of go back to Africa, right? That is not helpful, and that takes away from the opportunity, which is to debate whether free markets or socialism is the way you're going to solve problems in the future. And so when you're taking away and making it harder to have those real substantive debates, that's not going to help us electorally. But what I have found is, look, I spend time in areas that people never saw a Republican, and they appreciate that. And that's why I've consistently been successful in a blue wave when, people that weren't very popular on top of the ticket were involved. And so that's how we've been able to survive. And that's proof that the majority of Americans are willing to vote for someone, for an individual, not just because they have a letter after their name. And that's the, and I've been able to prove that in my three terms.
Now, I have to ask you one final question because I feel like it's an important one. Many people are surprised at how little many of your fellow Republicans have spoken out against the president, even though he disagrees with things that they see as fundamental issues of principle. Are you going to support Donald Trump for re-election in 2020? And do you think that you would have a duty or a responsibility to speak out about your concerns about his fitness for office?
My plan right now is to vote for the Republican nominee. And I'm going to continue to evaluate and speak up and, agree when I agree and disagree when I disagree.
So we'll be hearing from you a lot then.
I'm not bashful.
No, absolutely not. Congressman Will Hurd, thank you again.
Here we are. The pleasure was mine.
The Cannon House Office Building.
317.
Representative Will Hurd of Texas. In August, he announced his retirement from Congress. Susan Glasser writes the weekly column, Letter from Trump's Washington, anewyorker.com.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.